Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It wants again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the NASCAR Radio Show Scan. Stop Child Abuse Now, episode number 2874. And my name is Annie Margis, and I'm here today to help run the show. And I would like to begin with reading the purpose of NASCAR. NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, and we have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional trauma, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And goal two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And now, here I am. I'm sorry. I would like to introduce tonight's special guest and survivor professional. She is Cherie White, from Covington, Tennessee, an anti-bullying advocate and author of three books. She uses her own story of being bullied and gaslighted to help those enduring the same abuse today. Quote, when I became a target of severe and chronic bullying as a sixth grader at the age of 12, I began a long lesson in the human predatory-prey dynamic and the battle for my dignity, safety, and my very soul, end quote. At first, she took the physical beatings, name-calling, and abuse. Cherie was a victim of what is called polyvictimization. In just 6 months, she went from being a kid who always made the honor roll to an angry and bitter girl who made only C's and D's. Quote, who could concentrate on schoolwork, she asks. Cherie attempted suicide at the age of 14. Quote, because I felt powerless, I began to bully those who were even weaker than me in attempts to grab back power, end quote. And with that introduction, I would like to welcome our guest, Cherie White. Hi, Cherie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm so happy to have you here. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you?
I'm doing really well. And we also have on the line today Bill, the president of NASCA. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. How are you doing, ladies?
Doing great. How are you doing,
well,
Bill?
I was a little confused at the top of the show because I saw nobody was on the host line, so I was trying to call in, and you called in like 10 seconds before I did, Annie. But you were supposed to host tonight. So
oh,
I'm
really?
Serendipity. Yeah. You did a great job.
That's funny.
Cherie, I've been using Cherie. It's Cherie?
Yeah, it's Cherie.
Cherie. Well, why didn't you ever fix that for me? Tell me. I was calling you the wrong name.
Well, actually, it's the way my name is spelled, C-H-E-R-I-E, so
yeah.
A lot of people mistake it. I mean, as Sherry, I've had that happen my whole life, so I just go with it, you know.
Right, I understand. Well, if it pops out of my mouth again, forgive me in advance, okay?
Okay.
I'm really glad you're here tonight because Bobby Joy, has been off for a while. She suggested that you might be someone who would come in, and you certainly are filling a slot that's important to fill. As a professional and a survivor professional, our listeners and those who come in and want to be on the panel will engage with you and any topic they want to, especially under the category of anti-bullying and so forth. But it doesn't have to be any abuse topic, and you can answer from your own personal life or from your professional life. See, you don't have to answer from one or the other. So that's why this show is a little different. And you never know where it's going to go because the topics are unlimited, really. So I hope people will call in. Let me give out the number, Annie, and then I'll come back right here. It's 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. I'm hoping that a couple other people would call in because I want to welcome Sherry to the show. This is the first time you've been here, right? The first time.
It's the first time I've been a guest. The other times that I've been on this show, I've been one of the one that called in.
Got it. Okay, well, this is your debut then as being a special guest. I hope you feel like you're on the hot seat.
A little, not a whole lot. A little.
Can I ask Annie, why don't you let's ask you a little bit, Ms. White, about your early years, and then we'll have Annie take it from there for a while, right? Just tell us a little bit about the situation where you grew up, like how many kids were in the family and stuff like that, all right?
Okay. I had a little brother. You know, when my brother was born when I was three, and I was an Army brat. We were Army brats. And we lived in different places. So, the life of a military kid, it's a life. It's a great life. You get to see a lot of different places. You get to meet, different people from different backgrounds, different nationalities, creeds. And it's just a really being a military kid for me was an exciting life. The only downside was that I had grandmothers that spoiled me rotten, so I would miss them. They were back in Tennessee, so when we would come visit the grandparents and Christmases and, 2 weeks during Christmas and 2 weeks during the summer, because soldiers always got a 30-day furlough. So my daddy kind of divided them up. We'd come every Christmas and every summer. And so when it came time to go back to wherever we were stationed, it was hard on me because I would miss the grandmothers and I would cry all the way back home. But,
the very next day I would bounce back. Yeah, I identify with this, though, Sherry, because I also grew up in a military area, and my father was ex-military, but he worked for the government, and it was the state of Virginia. And we were living in Virginia Beach, and the whole area down there on the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic Ocean is military of all different kinds. So my father would take me on board one of the carriers that was in for an afternoon fun. An afternoon of fun. It was fun. It was exciting.
Oh, I bet.
That. Yeah.
You got to go on a carrier. That is awesome.
Oh yeah, I went on several lots of ships and several different kinds of ships, including subs and sub tenders and destroyers and on. But the carriers, of course, were really special. I'm gonna be quiet now. I'm gonna ask Annie to take on the. We're gonna have to get into your bullying experience here a little bit. So Annie, thank you for letting me butt in and start her off with the early years, which it happens I identify with. Thank you, Annie.
Thanks, Bill.
So, Cherie, will you tell us a little bit about what it was like being a little kid for you?
A little kid? Well, honestly, I can say I had a wonderful childhood, Other than, the bullying I suffered at school, of course, I had a good childhood. I mean, granted, as with every family, there were ups and downs, but for the most part, my childhood was a good one. Being a military kid, having seen, different places and met different people, and when we would come to Tennessee, my maternal grandmother, she would host these New Year's Eve parties. And the whole family would get together, and even both sides of the family, my dad's side and my mom's side, would all gather over at Umal's house, or they would all gather over at my paternal grandmother's house, and she was Grandma. So I had both sides of the family got along with each other quite well. Which is unusual these days. And, I don't know how unusual it was back then, but both sides of my family got along quite well. They got close. I mean, both sides, my mother's and daddy's, we were just like one big happy family. And, my maternal grandmother would throw some really good New Year's Eve parties where we would drink Coke. She didn't allow people to get drunk. It was good, clean fun where we would play records. We would dance. My uncles and my daddy would get together sometimes and form their own little band and play in the backyard. And some of the neighbors would hear the music and they would come over and join us. So, for the most part, my childhood was great.
It sounds really wonderful. But sadly, it was interfered with by bullies at school.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I started, I was new at I'm not going to call the school by their real name, so I'm just going to say Oakley Elementary. I was new there in the sixth grade, and, I was different. I didn't think like my classmates. Most of them had grown up in the same small town all their lives, so they really had not, been outside of West Tennessee. So, I didn't think like they did because I'd been to a lot more places and, military kids just don't think like kids that have grown up in the small town, and the small town's the only thing they know. So I took quite a lot of heat for that, And because I was different, I was singled out. And during the sixth grade, I didn't fight back because I was always taught that young ladies did not fight. They just didn't do mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So I did not fight back. But I took a lot of physical abuse. I was shoved down. I was choked. I was beaten, had my hair pulled. I mean, everything physical you could think of, they did it to me. So by the time I got out, we got out of the sixth grade for the summer, and we're getting ready to transition to the seventh grade, I made up to myself that I wasn't going to take any more of their abuse. And so in my thinking was, no, it's not ladylike to fight, but it's not ladylike to get your face beat in every other day either. Mm-hmm. So when I went back to, I went to the seventh grade in junior high, I started fighting back. But here's the thing. I had already let the bullying go on too long, and to the point to where the other kids grew comfortable abusing me. And once somebody gets comfortable abusing you, you can fight back until the cows come home, and it's not going to make them stop. The best thing to do in a bullying situation, and this is something that I did not know at the time. I was just a kid, and people didn't put a lot of emphasis on bullying in those days. Back in those days, bullying was considered a normal rite of passage that every kid goes through. Well, back then when I was going through it, I knew that was false, and it was a cop-out. And luckily for the last 15, 20 years, people are starting to realize that. But back to what I was saying, I was raised that nice young ladies did not fight. Well, by the time I got to the seventh grade, I was like, you know what? I've got to fight back. I've got to protect myself. And unfortunately, when I started fighting back, I had already let it go on so long that everybody had got comfortable abusing me. And once they get comfortable, it's almost impossible to stop it. That's why it's so important that you nip it in the bud right when it first begins, because you have a lot more chance of getting them to stop.
That's really good advice. I like it. But how do you nip it in the bud? How do you get them to not be bullies?
Well, the thing about bullying is it starts out little by little. It starts out small. And over time, if you don't take care of it when it first begins, it will inch by inch, drip by drip, get worse and worse and worse. And it's a slow, gradual escalation. Sometimes it starts out so small that you don't even realize it's happening. Bullies always start out subtle. And when it's so subtle you can barely detect it, then you don't know how to defend yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So the subtleties, once they get away with the subtleties, then they'll kind of take it up a notch and they'll start, you know, maybe making smart remarks towards you. Okay, so you ignore that. Next thing you know, they're going to start name-calling you, and you ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
So then they up it some more, and they start threatening you, threatening to beat you up, threatening to turn all your friends against you, things like that. Okay, so you ignore that, and next thing you know, they start using borderline physical abuse, and basically they start deliberately running into you in the halls and then they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to run into you, and you know doggone well they meant it. Or they'll start you know, accidentally on purpose tripping you. You know, it always starts, physical bullying always starts out like that. They'll deliberately, accidentally on purpose run into you. They'll accidentally on purpose trip you, accidentally on purpose knock over your books, you know. And then once you let them get away with that, then it escalates to shoving. Then it escalates to hitting, and then the hitting and kicking escalate to all-out beatings. So if only I knew then what I knew, what I know now.
And you're helping other people that. Know now what you should have known then.
Yes, yes. I have a blog. I've also published books that have bullying in them. And I'm currently writing a book, a how-to book, and it's going to be called How to Become 10 Feet Tall and Bully Proof.
Wow. I'm going to read that.
Yeah.
I'm not bully-proof,
I'm working
at
on
all.
It.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't.
I was bullied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't, but I think I'm more, I'm not completely bully-proof, but I think I'm a lot more bully-proof now than I was then, because I can see, number one, I can spot a bully a mile away. Once you've dealt with something for so long, you learn to, once you are bullied for that amount of time, and I was bullied over years, you develop a lie detector and a fake detector, and you can spot bullies from a mile away. It's like when you lose your hearing or you lose your eyesight, all of a sudden your hearing becomes keener. You've heard of that, right? Well, once you've been bullied, you know, your people, it sharpens your people sense, because it's a way to survive. It's a survival mechanism. You have no choice when you have been, when you're bullied for that long. You know, in order to survive, your brain basically sharpens up when it comes to people. And you can spot a fake and a liar or a bad person a mile away. You don't even have to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
It sharpens your BS detector.
You know, I think this is a phenomenon that's shared by a lot of us, and I'm sure by some listeners too. In fact, I'd like them to call in if they want to share some of this. It'd be great. And that's 646-595-2118. But really, the reason I spoke up is because I'm identifying with a lot of this. I was both bullied and defensive of other people who were being bullied. So I kind of mimicked the bullies in order to defend them. But it was not done out of maliciousness. It was done out of protection. I can remember several boys who had somehow gotten themselves kind of, you know, in the target of of bullies at school, and they were too weak to do anything about it, and I could see that, you know. So I'd kind of step in and, you know, oh yeah, put up your dukes kind of thing, you know. I actually had some fist fights over people because I wanted them to leave these boys alone, and they refused to do it. But I was thinking about how. Why I did what I did was partly because I was being molested at the same time sexually, and that was a secret. So nobody at all knew what was happening to me, but I knew. And when I saw someone else being basically abused, you know, being taken advantage of because of their perceived weakness, I certainly was feeling that myself. For that other realm, and that made me want to kind of protect them, you know, stand up and protect them. But I think between about third grade and high school, and then some of high school too, a couple of years, we're really bad in terms of this phenomenon, bullying, and feeling less than, you know, and kind of cowering, you know, and people can tell that. They could tell that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. They take advantage of the boy who's cowering rather than the one who's, you know, standing up straight and so forth. I guess that's not an exact phenomenon, but, you know, there's a metaphor there somehow. But
right.
So I'm interested in if people have had this experience help from whatever angle, if they'd call in. And by the way, Sherry, we have the link to the book page on your website under the,
yes.
It says author of three books. And then we also have the blog, which says who uses her own story in the description. And that's linked to the blog. So you just mentioned the books and the blog, and that's so that people can easily find them. All right?
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Cherie, I'd like to hear a little bit about your books. You have three of them already. My goodness. Want to tell us about them?
Yes. My first book was published in 2017. It's a memoir of the 6 years that I was bullied in school, and it's called From Victim to Victor, A Survivor's True Story of Her Experiences with School Bullying, How She Overcame, Won Back Her Confidence, and Found Peace and Happiness. And this book tells the story of the bullying I suffered. Of course, it gives a backstory of how the bullying got started in the sixth grade, and then covers from the seventh grade until I graduated. Then after I graduate, it also gives a forward story after the story of, you know, what became of me after, like the first year after school. So anyway, it's basically it's a chronological account of the bullying I suffered and the effects that it had on me.
And then your second book, was that one a novel?
Yes, it's a fiction. My second book is Townies, Cronies, and Hayseeds. It came out in 2018, and it's a fiction about Shannon McGregor. She is a widowed mother of 4 children. And anyway, her backstory is she was bullied in school in the fictional town of Thomasville, Tennessee, and she finally left and moved to Tucson, Arizona in the 11th grade and got away from her bullies. Well, this book covers the story of later on in life. She has to leave Tucson and come back to Thomasville, where she was bullied. Her grandmother had lived there, and she had just died. So Shannon has to come back and get her estate, settle her estate. Anyway, she's a widowed mother of 4 children, and she's living outside of Tucson, Arizona, and has the life others only dream of having. She's a best-selling author and can make a great living doing what she loves most, which is writing novels. And every area in her life is close to perfect. But her life hasn't always been rosy. So the backstory is that she's an adult survivor of school bullying.
Oh.
And and she has actually risen above it. But she has to go back to Thomasville and settle her grandmother's estate. Because her grandmother back in Thomasville dies suddenly. So, and she inherits her house because, you know, her father's, her father has died. So she inherits her estate. So she's got to return with her children to the home of her youth and make necessary renovations to the house and sell the property before she comes back to Arizona. But when she returns to the town, she learns that the very people who run the town are the same people who had tormented her in school. And so she has to, you know, she runs into these people, and they know who she is, and they know that she has written a book about how they treated her. So though these people have not changed, and they use politics to bully her. Instead of bullying her in school, these people are now adult bullies, and they use politics and their power and connections to bully her and her children. And then it ends
and
up
that's what
escalating
bullies do,
to the point.
Isn't it?
Yes, and in the story, it escalates to the point to where the lives of herself and her children are threatened, and they have to escape the town. And then I have The Vow of Chastity Baker. It's about a woman who has a past of being a prostitute. Well, anyway, she gets out of that life, and she starts trying to better herself. She goes into rehab and gets off the meth. And basically it says, Chastity Baker is a teenage prostitute and meth junkie living in the streets of Memphis. After being arrested and hitting rock bottom, she makes herself a solemn vow that she would leave prostitution and drugs behind and live a better life, and she makes good on that vow. You know, Chast takes the necessary steps to improve her life, only she cannot seem to outrun her past. Her past mistakes follow her in the forms of a sadistic and vindictive pimp and drug supplier who now wants her dead for getting out of the business, and various people who know her from her darker days and cruelly pass judgment on her. And, you know, throughout her journey to try and make a better life for herself, circumstances arise and present themselves as roadblocks to her progress. And but eventually she sails past it. But mainly she is bullied by many people because of her past.
I look forward to reading your books. I
oh,
have a
thank
question
you.
Too. Your first book is biographical, but your second and third are novels. And I wondered what you had to say about writing in those two different ways.
Well, I really don't know. I've been writing stories ever since I was 10 years old. So, you know, I guess it's just easy for me to switch gears. Like, you know, I'll write a novel the first time, a memoir the first time, and then I write fictions, you know, the other three books. And my fourth book, I failed to mention my fourth book, it's entitled Kids Under the Latch Key. And it's a first-person narrative. It's a story told by a now adult, by someone who is now an adult. And it's based back in the summer of 1987. During the summer of 1987, then 16-year-old Grace Bradshaw, her younger brother Max, and neighborhood friend befriend a guy named Randy Spence. He is a 21-year-old mentally disabled man with an IQ of a child. And this man is mocked by many in the corrupt small town. But these kids take Randy under their wing and protect him. And they learn hard lessons about the way most people treat those who are different. And along the way, Grace also learns shocking lessons about good and evil. And it's a first-person narrative told by a now middle-aged and widowed Grace Bradshaw McGuire to her adult children. And this,
excellent.
Basically, the neighborhood friends befriend Randy, who is mentally disabled. And they protect him because it seems that everybody in the town just walks all over him. And he's got a heart of gold. He's like a child. And there is his moral compass never wavers. He's good. He's pure. And people take advantage of that. Are you there?
I apologize for the sound of the dog barking. I'm not at home. And the person whose home I'm in has a dog who barks.
Right. Gotcha. Well, it didn't sound like a dog bark. It sounded like white noise, like shh. So.
Oh, really? It's a little dog.
Yeah, it sounded like
crinkling
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded like white noise because I thought for a minute there that we had been disconnected.
Oh.
But anyway, I was the last. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just asking Bill if he had any comments.
I think it's fantastic that you can write that easily. I'm not a good I have problem even getting started. and I've never written anything of any length. So I look up to people that can do that. But I find the subjects of the books very interesting. That last one's particularly interesting. And the kid is being protected by other children his own age. Are they his own age or are they older?
Actually, they're younger. Randy, the mentally disabled guy, he's 21 years old.
Okay.
But the kids who protect him, Grace is 16, Max is 13, and the other kids are 12 and 11.
Oh,
so
boy.
Because Randy has a mind of a child, and Grace has pretty much known him all her life, and so have her family, the other families don't mind him hanging with these kids because, you know, he's pretty much harmless. But to everybody else outside the kids and their families, you know, people perceive him as weak, as, you know, not important, and they just treat him like trash. And the kids protect him. Later on in the book, something terrible happens. And it really shakes Grace to her core.
I find I don't know how you came up with the subject matter, but it's fascinating, you know, how you did that. And it kind of relates to the bullying problem that you had, too, because that's basically what was happening to Randy, right? He was being bullied.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Except he was out of school, and the neighborhood, the people in the town were bullying him, even adults.
Right, right. Well, it's fascinating that you can do that. I don't know. I was afraid to write things down because then they'd be final or something like that when I was a kid. I never got into it.
Right.
And now I've published websites, you know, over the most recent years, the last 10 years or so. But, actually 20 years, huh? It's 2020, isn't it? Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, writing's always been, it's always been therapeutic for me. Writing was how I had my say. I was able to have my say. So writing has always been good therapy, and it's very cathartic for me.
I agree. I try to write every day 3 pages, just stream of consciousness. First thing in the morning, 3 pages. And it's amazing the insights and the deep harms that I used to remember and things I realize about the way I'm behaving. And it all comes through just writing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm working on several unpublished books. One of them I've almost got done is called A Mile in Charlotte's Shoes. And it's going to be about a girl named Charlotte who is bullied in school, but she has autism, or so she's been diagnosed with it. So anyway, she gets tired of being bullied, and so she self-help books, and she gets so obsessed with reading these self-help books. You know, they teach her the first book she reads is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And then she reads other self-help books like The Art of War by Sun Tzu and The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. Reads books like that. And she puts it into practice. She practices what she reads. And she actually goes from being on the autism spectrum and goes back to her doctor and they has a test again, and they can't find where she is autistic. She's reading all of these books and learning how to socialize, but she learns it a little too well. So she goes from being autistic to being a psychopath, where she manipulates people. But eventually, you know, something later on in the book, something bad happens to her, and that she almost dies, and that kind of centers her.
Mm-hmm.
She learns a lot of lessons, and the tragedy that almost kills her causes her to realize some things, and it centers her, and she basically makes her way back to God. When she's bullied so badly, she turns her back on God, and she absolutely detests God because she feels like that He made her the way that she was, and she hates Him for giving her autism, quote unquote. So she decides to learn for herself how to be normal, and she learns it a little bit too well. She goes from one extreme to the other, but after the tragedy happens to her and she nearly dies, then she turns back to God, and that's what centers her.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. How many hours a day do you spend working on your book?
Oh, Lord. Well, on the weekends, you know, I take the weekends off to spend time with my husband, but I work a lot of hours. I work a lot of hours on my book, mostly my blog, but I work on my books too.
What about in your blog?
Let me see. Basically, I usually attack bullying from all angles in my blog. I'll like for example, one post that I have posted is the definition of bullying, how to know what is and isn't bullying.
That's interesting.
Yeah. This is
and
my
where can people read your blog? Where is it?
It is www.shereewhite.blog. And I talk about the definition of bullying, what is and isn't bullying. Like, I'll give the definition at the top, and then, you know, all too often bullying is confused with disagreements and truthful debates, misunderstanding, stubbornness, and incivility and jerky behavior. And sad to say, last few years, bullying has become a blanket term to describe anyone who is only rude and opinionated. The label of bully is too quickly stuck to people who are not necessarily bullied. And I've noticed that in the last, I'd say, 5 or 10 years. Basically, they may not be bullies. They just may be uncivil jerks. Basically, anyone who says, does, or believes anything that the labeler doesn't find comfortable is considered bullying, and it's not. For something to be considered bullying, there must be all of these ingredients: an imbalance of power, repetition, repeated attacks against the same person over a long time. And the behavior has to be a habit or the same pattern against the same victim. If it's just random against random people, then it's not bullying. The person is just being a jerk. But if the behavior is a habit, or if it is a pattern against the same person over a long period of time, then it is bullying. You know, for example, if a 6'5" tall and muscular knucklehead on the street bumps into you and says, "Hey, idiot, watch where the heck you're going," then keeps walking, that's not bullying. Now, is he a jerk?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But he's not a bully. Now, if he deliberately runs into you and shoots his mouth off to you every day, every time he sees you on the street, and he makes a habit of it by continuing to harass you, then yes, that's a bully, because he would be using his size and height to intimidate you, and he'd be repeating the same behavior every day.
Mm-hmm.
So bullying is a pattern.
These...
It's not just an – oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. What about parents who bully? I was bullied by my mother and abused by my father, but because she was a bully, I married a bully, and at work, subordinates bullied me. It's like they knew they could get me, and so they would pick on me and bully me. And I think the reason was because I was raised with it. It was normal for me, and I didn't talk back. I just took it, because with my mother, if I tried to talk back, I would be bullied even more. And so I learned, no, you just take it. You don't talk back. You just take it. And so I spent my life being bullied by people and just taking it. But I don't do it anymore, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And you know what? Bullying, that's what a bullying and abuse does. It conditions you. You know, and basically you were being conditioned. And you were a child. That was your formative years. So your formative years are basically the most important years. It's where you develop habits and lifelong habits. And once you've been conditioned to keep your mouth shut, it's hard to get out of that, because you're wired that way. Bullies wire you. They rewire you. They reprogram you. And before you know it, you're just taking all kinds of crap from people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you don't even know you're doing it. You don't even know that you're taking crap. You don't even know they're abusing you because it's become so normalized in your life. You've become desensitized to it. I once read an article about scientists who kept dogs, okay? They kept these dogs in cages, and the scientists would – there was one group of dogs that they would torture, and they would torture if they tried to get out of the cage. And then there was another group of dogs that were not tortured. So the first group of dogs who were tortured, they would open the door to the cage, and the dog wouldn't he wouldn't run. He would just cower in the corner, the abused dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But the second group of dogs who had never been abused, you know, they would abuse them, and then they would open the door, and that dog would run. So mm-hmm. anything that happens over a long period of time, it conditions you. You know, and conditioning happens when others brainwash and train you to believe something. It's how evil and terrible abuses get normalized. When you're a target of bullying, bullies will try to condition you to roll over and take their abuse. Conditioning doesn't happen overnight. It's a slow, incremental, bit by tiny bit process that can also be soft and subtle. And that's usually how it starts out, as I mentioned earlier. It always starts out soft and subtle. And this is how you know your bullies have conditioned you. You know, and you know by the feelings you have. And number one, if you feel guilty for speaking out and reporting bullying to authority, then your bullies have conditioned you. Number two, if you feel that the bullying is your fault, you have been conditioned. If you feel, number three, if you feel like a mean and cruel person for standing up for yourself, then you've been conditioned. Number four, if you feel guilty about saying no to anyone, your bullies have conditioned you. And that's how it happens.
I've been conditioned.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I was thinking sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was thinking about how you could work with a therapist, perhaps, to get out of bullying. But I don't even know how you'd get to the point of bullying, because if you go into a therapist, you're not going to be talking about bullying. I don't think it's not a topic that you hit the head of the nail with. You dance around it a little bit, you know, and of course it has a lot to do with, if you are bullied and you are in one of those stages that you just mentioned, you have such low self-esteem, you recognize in yourself the inability to speak up, and that's the pattern, that's part of the pattern that you follow.
That's right.
It's not illegal to bully, right? Is it?
Right, it's not.
Right.
I think they just. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I want to hear what you're saying.
No, I think they're passing a few laws against it over in the UK, but they haven't passed any laws against it here in America.
Right. So the point of that is, you know, we have mandated reporters of different kinds, teachers and therapists and doctors and so forth. You're not breaking a law when you're a bully, so I don't think there's any reason for a therapist or a doctor to be, watching for this. And besides, there's nowhere to report it to. You know, it's not like sex abuse. It's not like violent abuse. You know, it's not, you know, which you can report somebody and they go to the judicial system. That's not the case with bullying, I don't think. I'm kind of asking a question here.
Well, see, the thing about bullies is bullies are cowards. And most seasoned bullies, people that have been bullying for a long time and know what they can and can't get away with, they will bully by passive aggression. See, a lot of bullies do psychological abuse. You know, they won't hit because they know if they hit, then they'll get in trouble. So what they do is they cover their butts by doing psychological abuse and emotional abuse. It's called emotional manipulation. And that's how the most seasoned and expert bullies do it. And I say expert bullies because there's a lot of bullies that are real good at getting away with their crap. And the reason that is because they are a lot of bullies are very convincing liars. They're wordsmiths. They know how to draw people to them. They have superficial charm that is, they have a way of making people like them. A lot of bullies are very charming. You know, they fool people. But only the target knows the dark side of this bully. But because people like this bully, it can be weaponized against the target. And that in itself can silence the target. The target is getting bullied like crazy, but he's afraid to speak out because, hey, everybody likes this guy over here that's bullying me. If I tell, who's going to believe me?
Right.
Because nine times out of ten, the bully has demonized the target to anybody who will listen. So he's already got people believing that the target is the bully and that they are such a bad person. I mean, so the target has no choice but to keep quiet. Really, what bullying is entrapment. You feel trapped. Hello?
Well, yeah. It's kind of like you're bullying, you're trying to control them. I guess at a certain point you are controlling them because you cross the barrier of it being innocent to it being, you know, all encompassing of the person that's being bullied. You know, there's a power structure there that once you get to it.
Bullying is all about power and control. It's all about taking. It's all about power over. You see, there's personal power, and then there's power over. Personal power is basically a person's autonomy. And personal power isn't harmful. We all have to have personal power in order to be autonomous and to power over basically is the type of power that a bully takes over their target, or an abusive husband takes over his battered wife. That's power over. It's power over that you have to watch out for. And bullying is all about power and control.
The
thing about bullies is that if they have selected you as a target and you start speaking out and standing your ground, these bullies, if they cannot control you, they will control how everybody sees you. In other words, they will launch a smear campaign against you, and they will turn everybody against you if they can. So if they cannot control you, they will control how everybody sees you. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, what can I do when that happens to me again, if it does? What can I do to stop a bully and turn it against them or turn it around so that I'm not bullied?
What you can do is the first time you see it, put a stop to it right away. And how you do that is to either ask the person to leave or leave yourself. and then go no contact. That's the best way to to get rid of a bully. Because, see, if you have the narcissistic type of bullies, they're very hard to win against. So the best thing to do is just to go no contact.
That's really good advice.
Well, this is kind of what
I tried
was
to go no contact
before.
A few times. With...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, this is what I was pointing to before, that since it's not an illegal act, nobody's going to, you know, take your side necessarily and jump in unless they want to. But they're not required to. It's not a legal thing. So,
right.
I think we know this. I think it has something to do with the kind of power that that happens in a domestic violence relationship.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, right? So where one person's asserting power and the other's kind of accepting that assertion. But you can't, once it sets in, I don't know how you change the pattern of behavior from either side. The bully, there's no reason for him to change. I'm saying him. But... because there's no penalty. You know, at least the other person has kind of a mental challenge, an emotional challenge, and a spiritual challenge that, you know, you could address that in therapy, I suppose. But the bully himself doesn't have consequences. Am I wrong?
That's right. A lot of bullying gets rewarded, unfortunately. And, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that think that you have to bully people in order to land on top, you know?
Right, right.
And that, you know, there are a lot of people that think they have to bully people in order to get on top. And,
mm-hmm.
That couldn't be further from the truth, but unfortunately, it works for them. Here's bullies need targets to depend on their approval. That's also where they get their power from. And
right.
You know, domestic violence is bullying, and it is a form of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about the conditioning earlier. You know, bullies successfully convince targets that they must depend on their say-so for something. You know,
mm-hmm.
they make the target feel like they have no choice but to depend on them, the bullies. Bullies have targets believing they have to have their say-so for acceptance and approval, for the ability to make friends and establish relationships. Many targets of bullying have been hoodwinked into thinking that they should depend on bullies to have all of these things. And it's the same. This is how bullies keep targets, especially essentially begging for it, by dangling carrots of the possibilities of acceptance. And the reason they do this is to keep their targets under their control and to force them to do what they want to do. And domestic abusers, they're the same way. They're also bullies. They do the same to their partners, pendant in order to keep control of them. Only domestic partners keep their partners dependent mostly on financial resources, by keeping a tight grip on any money that comes into the household. Domestic abusers also close their partners off from any job opportunities and cutting them off from their friends and family who may see through them and convince their partner to leave. So abuse is abuse, whether it comes in the form of bullying or domestic violence and psychological manipulation. And, you know, even socialist and communist governments have done the same thing. So there's bullying in all sorts of – bullying comes in all levels.
I want to talk a little bit about
serial victimization. I'm not sure if that was the right word for it. When you are victimized again and again by bullies?
Yes, absolutely. Serial victimization. Bullying is all about serial victimization. You know, it's basically the same thing as serial victimization. It becomes a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything we can do to turn bullies around and make them stop doing it?
Well, unfortunately, you know, you're not going to make them all stop. A lot of times you have to go no contact. That's why it's so important that you stand up for yourself right when it first happens. Because like I said earlier, when it goes on for too long and people start getting comfortable with mistreating you, it gets harder and harder to stop the longer it goes on unaddressed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever get to that point where the person has become comfortable mistreating you, it's always best just to boot them out of your life. You have to get them out of your life and
that
go no contact.
Great advice. You know, it would never have occurred to me to simply go no contact in the past. I would have always thought, well, no, you know, they're just going to keep hurting me and I'm just going to keep feeling it. And then, but the idea is I could actually stop. I could actually stop experiencing this by going no contact. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and you know, years ago it never occurred to me. It never occurred to me to go no contact. You know, I've had classmates, you know, ask me to come to the reunion. I mean, the few classmates that I actually got along with, which I can only count on one hand, out of about 200 classmates, I can only count on one hand the ones I actually got along with. But when these people ask me if I'm going to the reunion, my answer is an emphatic no. And you know, because I'm just not going to put myself in the position to get mistreated again. And I know for a fact that these classmates that bullied me, they have not changed one bit. They're still the same despicable people they were back years ago. You know, even though they're approaching 50, a lot of them never grew up. And no, I don't, you know, I don't owe them anything. And I don't want to see them. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm happy just having my family, you know, my little circle of friends that I have. You know, I'm happy with that. I don't need them.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just be better for me and them if they just stayed out of my life. It's not that I don't forgive them.
What about if you...
I do forgive them. But sometimes you have to forgive somebody from afar.
Yeah. What if it's somebody like a boss or a neighbor or someone that you can't really go no contact with? Do you have any advice to that?
Again, I would stand up to the person right when the bullying starts. And, you know, if they say something that makes you feel that makes you feel bad, even though bullying is subtle, you can still feel it. And that's when you cut it off right there. And you just refuse to have anything to do with the person. And if you're going to speak out, you speak out right when it starts.
Yeah.
And then if they don't stop, then you just simply don't have anything to do with the person. Now, if the person harasses you, say you go out and you mow your yard, and the neighbor is harassing you, that's when it's time to get the police involved. Now, the police may not do anything, but the thing is, fill out a police report anyway. You still get the police involved. They may not do anything, but there's a paper trail. When you make a report, there's going to be a paper trail. That way, if that person does something really bad to you, then there's a history there that you've established.
Right. It's really good advice. And in the case of a bully boss, I suppose you could document it and take it to the labor board or somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you are being bullied at work, especially by a bully boss or even bully coworkers, you have to document. Documenting is so important. You can't just go and report them by word of mouth. You have to document. Because when you document, you establish a pattern. And because bullying, especially of the psychological and of emotional variety, it's difficult to prove to people in authority who are in a position to help you. And the reason why it's it's so hard to prove is because, again, bullies are master charmers. You know, they're charming to the right people. When the victim finally gets sick of the harassment and reports the bullying, and when the bully is questioned by authority, the bully will often pour the charm on. Also, you know, maybe the bully has a little bit of influence over these authority members like teachers, principals, supervisors. Maybe they're making high marks, excellent grades, or if it's a workplace bullying, maybe they're high performers at work. So that can also be weaponized. Bullies can also use good looks, impeccable dressing, and grooming to seduce others. And basically, all seduction is charm. It's charm. Mm. And basically, they draw people to them. They get them to like them. And if everybody likes the bully, you don't have a chance. They're also convincing liars and actors. They have a flair for spreading the most convincing rumors and lies, and they do this to convince others not to associate with you if you're a victim. Therefore, you lose support, and you have no one to turn to for help. And so a lot of times, victims have been bullied so long that when they finally go to report it, they react out of emotion. Anytime you react out of emotion, and then you've got the bully over here putting on a calm and collected demeanor, people in authority will almost always side with the bully because of this false coolness the bully displays in front of everybody. And all the bully's going to do is point out your perfectly normal emotional reaction, and they're going to twist everything to convince everyone that you're either the bully or that you are mentally unstable. Now, that's a classic defense bullies use. Oh, well, she's crazy, or she's mentally imbalanced. She's too sensitive. She's overly dramatic, you know.
Yep.
Also, the bully, exactly. And the bully will also feign victimhood. Sometimes they'll burst into tears, you know, which is all designed to shift the blame onto you and persuade anyone in authority to take their side. And, you know, they're, like I said, they're master wordsmiths who can explain away and rationalize any bad behavior. They spin a story that is so convincing that teachers or supervisors or managers will find it hard not to believe it. And in the end, the target gets the blame. And either those in authority refuse to discipline the bully or they punish the victim instead. So it's so important to document because it offers you a voice and it enables you to have a say when no one else is listening. Document also offers you a legal record of the bullying. document, anytime you document the bullying, it's admissible in court. But you have to do it for a long time in order to establish a pattern. And how you do this is you use the 5W rule: where, who, when, why, and sometimes how. It's what, who, where, when, and why, and sometimes how. And that's what I call, that's what we call the 5W rule. For example, you jot down the date, an exact time, the where, the what, the bullying incident that happened, who was involved, the names of and titles of the bullies, but also the names of any bystanders who were present at the time. The when, that's your time and your date and the exact time, and then why they bullied you. For example, was the bully retaliating because you reported prior harassment? And you write down every detail.
Mm. And do you write it down in the presence of the bully?
No. What you do is you write it down just as soon as you can get away from the bully.
Okay.
Because you don't want to write it down in the presence of the bully. Because basically, I can tell you that some classmates found my journal. I started journaling about or documenting the bullying I was going through in the eighth grade. My grandmother had suggested that I write about it like a story. But she told me to put down the exact date and time, all the names of the bullies, and the bystanders who were present. Write down what happened, who was involved, who the bystanders were, where it happened, whether, you know, could be the school bathroom, the parking lot, the hallways, when it happened, which is the date and time, and why. So I started doing that, and, well, unfortunately, a couple of my classmates found my documentation and told the teacher about it. Teacher took my journal or my documentation. I call it my journal. They took my journal and then called the principal, and then he took it and read it. Well, anyway, I never saw it again. The only thing that saved me was that I had a backup journal that I kept at home. So I didn't lose a whole lot. But
I was going to ask you about some of what you just described. And it's, you know, if as a matter of fact, it's difficult for you to bring charges or whatever, to, you know, to be listened to be believed and so forth. And the principal there is one of those people, and maybe the teacher too, you know, who they understood there was something to it, but when it came right down to it, they weren't going to take any action except take your book away, I guess.
Right. Oh, they were scared. I mean, when they read it, they knew. I mean, they were scared of getting sued. So they took my journal, and I was bullied even harder for that. And in fact, the principal was bullied.
Right, I'd have been interested in what they would have done
too. Right, well, they were bullies. They were bullies themselves. The teacher was a bully, and the principal was a bully. So when they found out that I was writing about all these incidences, they got scared. I could see it in their eyes. And that fear.
Sure,
but not scared enough to talk.
Exactly. But from then on, I was considered a threat. And that's when the heat really got turned up.
Now, you must have gotten into recovery through a therapy or something. I'm interested. How did you make that turn? Because you sound pretty healthy right now. In fact, you've taken what you experienced as a younger person and made it.
I did have therapy for it. Yes, I did have therapy for it. Yes, but a lot of it was mind over matter. A lot of it was my writing about it. That helped tremendously. I did get therapy, and yes, it helped, but it didn't help like the writing about it did, and it didn't help. It didn't help like I had to go out and create my own experience, my own positive experiences. So you know, that also helped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I made friends outside of the school environment, and that was. To me, that was a buffer to my self-esteem. That was a, you know, it just took the sting out of the bullying I was suffering at school. It was the only way I survived.
Annie, we have a person who called in, it looks like, that didn't get their mic open yet. I don't know if you want to open it or not, because there's very little time left.
Sure.
This time for a comment or a question.
How do I open their mic?
Okay.
There you go. She got it.
I got it.
You got
Hello.
It.
Hello.
Hi. I've been listening. I just had a couple of things. I'm with Bill. My therapist asked me to do writing, too. I just get writer's block. I've done a few things, and it doesn't go anywhere. And there's a lot of online bullying, too. That's really horrific today with today's kids. And even when we were kids, you know, the kids want to belong to a group, and they one guy gets to be a bully, and they bully the other kid, and then that's the group to be, you know, the stronger group. You want to be in the stronger group. It's really very manipulative to the other kids, and it's hard. And bullying is very much like the other abusers that we've been through, and you were saying they get their friends to be there. I think they're called flying monkeys, if I'm not mistaken, in the lingo that I've gone in there. And for many of us, the schools were, you know, for me, and I think probably the other listeners who didn't call in, you know, at home was where all the abuse was going on. So you get out and you get to school, and it was almost a sanctuary. But certainly bullying is a big deal. And I think, for me, honesty's right off the bat. You know, somebody's going to start lying to you about, well, there's no reason for it, you know. Boom, out comes a lie. You're thinking, okay, this person's just not going to be, you know, going to be a bully or has a capacity to be anyway. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know and let Bill know, and I know that I was listening.
Is this
and it's
somebody
a good...
that we know? Are you calling regularly?
Yeah, I call all the time. I'm the bug.
Is this somebody that we?
I'm the bug.
You're
yeah,
the
what
bug.
Is your
I
name?
I told you I would be the bug, so you make refer to me as the bug, and I'm bugging you. No, I'm not bugging you.
You're not bugging. You're not bugging us.
He told me I could call and be a bug anytime, so I told him I'd call and be a bug. But I did a couple of bit writing, and it is, as you said, and I know the show is closing up, so that's great. But I did want to let you know that I friended you, and thank you for accepting it. And I looked at your site, and I looked at a lot of your other stuff in your book, and you've got a lot of insight. And certainly living a life and hindsight is what we have to give, is what Bill offers so many of us, to give our hindsight to those that listen and haven't had the experiences. When I was a kid, I loved the old folks. How dare you go die without giving me all that wisdom of life you've had, you know? Talk to me.
Right.
But anyway, I want to thank you very much for coming in tonight and for both of you for hosting Cherie.
Thank you, sir. You're very welcome.
Okie dokie. My name is Kathy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kathy for calling in.
Okie dokie. Thank you for letting me talk.
Thanks, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
You're very welcome. It was our pleasure, hon.
Was I a bug?
No.
Well,
not to me, you weren't.
I was a bug earlier.
I've been listening. I wanted to let you guys talk and hear what I was waiting to get to the healthy sexual part, but that didn't get. That's okay. It was a beautiful, beautiful discussion. Healthy human sexuality. Well, we can talk about that sometime.
I'm willing to talk about it.
There you go.
We have to get off the air, though. We're finishing the show right now. And
I know.
I'll give it back to Annie. So she
thanks
can
for letting
up.
Me on. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night, Kathy.
Thanks,
you have a good night.
All right, Cherie, we have 2.5 minutes left. Would you like to wrap up?
Yeah, sure. I can't stress this enough. The best way to combat bullying at work and even at school or any kind of bullying is to document it by using the 5W method and write it in detail, because if you do it long enough, you establish a pattern. Your document is also admissible in court, and it's going to be more believable because you're going to have all of this. Say you've been bullied for 6 months or maybe a year, and you started documenting 6 months ago and keeping it in the same notebook, you know, if you have to go to court, your lawyer and the judge, they're all going to look at that, and they're going to be like, wow, there's a pattern here. And it's going to be more believable. Documented cases of bullying are a lot more believable than just telling your story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's much harder to explain by mouth than it is to write about. And when you write about it, after long, there a pattern is established, and that's what the courts are wanting to see, is a pattern. If it is a pattern, and documents
well,
are
that's about
the best
our
way
time
to prove
true.
That. Okie dokie.
Thank you for that.
Really
good advice.
You're very welcome, and it was a pleasure being on your show tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for being here tonight. It was really good of you. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Cherie.
You're very welcome. It was so good. Good to talk to you guys.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone away.